You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Monday, October 30th, 2017, and we are here to talk about a couple Clippers games from last week and over the weekend and get ready for the Clippers' big matchup tonight against their nemesis, the Golden State Warriors. So, first of all, we'll get going and talk about that Portland game that the Clippers won last Thursday with Blake Griffin hitting that three-point shot at the buzzer, which was super exciting. We didn't have an episode at the end of last week because here at the Locked On Network, we switched our hosting platform over from Audio Boom to Megaphone, and I am still figuring out how to make Megaphone work. So hopefully this episode will get to you, but I did not have time on a very busy Friday last week to both figure that out and make an episode. But so hopefully this episode will get to you guys. Obviously, if you're listening to it, then it worked. So that game was fun. That game was great. It was almost like we missed the moment to talk about it because then the Clippers went and had that big letdown loss against Detroit, and like now we can't sort of ride the high of that Portland win. But I think we can still be happy about it. I mean, it was a really good win, first of all. I mean, Portland is a good team. They've been playing well to start the season. It's always tough to go play in Portland. It's always kind of a bitter game for the Clippers. And, you know, any win you can get is good. But then for Blake Griffin to do what he did with 16 points in the fourth quarter, including that off-the-dribble three-pointer at the buzzer to win the game, kind of a defining moment for Blake, I think, even more so than the big performances he's had in the Clippers' other early games. Because one of the big stigmas around Blake Griffin over the last few years has been his fourth quarter play. Largely to those of us who watched on a nightly basis, seemed to be a combination of a few things. First of all, jitters, definitely. He made mistakes, he dribbled off his foot, he did uncharacteristic things when the pressure was on. There's no denying that. But he also had very limited opportunities, with Chris Paul pretty much dominating the possession of the ball for the Clippers on offense down the stretch. The Clippers themselves were never a very good team at executing late in games, in part because Chris Paul would like to run the clock down for 20, 22 seconds of the shot clock. It was just a sample size of the amount of opportunities that he got, maybe a lack of experience, or when he was getting touches, he wasn't really being allowed to play freely. And then it's just the fact that fourth quarters tend to be more difficult for big guys than guards because guards can get the same kinds of shots that they get all game, you know, pull up jumpers, whatever. Whereas big men, it becomes a lot more congested in the post. And as we saw against Portland, the referees are a lot more reluctant to call those fouls. And so Blake Griffin, where he was getting calls earlier in the game, was really getting pushed and leaned on by smaller defenders against Portland. And the referees were letting him get away with it, which made his life a little more difficult down the stretch. But he still had those 16 fourth quarter points. He still, you know, made the buzzer beater to give the Clippers the win. So I think it was really a breakthrough performance for him. We've seen him have good performance all year, 29 points, 12 rebounds, whatever. But those are games we've seen in the past as well. I don't think we've ever seen Blake Griffin take over a game down the stretch and like this, you know. And we've seen him hit one game winner against Phoenix on a lucky bounce a few years ago. But so this is his second game winner, and I think his first game ever really taking over the game and scoring bucket after bucket after bucket in the fourth quarter. So that's a pretty big breakthrough for Blake. And then we saw a little bit of adjustments to the rotation, but I'll talk about that kind of in putting the two games together. So we moved to playing the Pistons on Saturday night, which was a pretty disappointing game for the Clippers, I think. So if you guys remember last season, the Clippers were 14-2. They were the best team in the NBA. They were number one in all sorts of power rankings. Chris Paul was number one in the MVP race. The Clippers had the best simple rating score on Basketball Reference of any team like ever, or one of the best of any basketball team ever, literally. And it was like, wow, the Clippers are for real this year. They figured it out. They got the right pieces around this core. And then the day before Thanksgiving, they played a road game in Dallas, and they won that game. And the day after Thanksgiving, they played a road game in Detroit. And instead of traveling to Detroit right after the Dallas game, which is what a team would normally do, so that you have that whole off day, in this case, which was Thanksgiving Day, to rest, they decided to stay in Dallas, go watch the Cowboys play on Thanksgiving, and then fly to Detroit. And they basically put themselves in a situation where they made that Detroit game like it was the second night of a back-to-back when it didn't need to be. And they went into Detroit. They were flat. They lost. Then they lost to Indiana. Then they lost to Brooklyn. Then within a couple weeks, Blake Griffin had that knee injury, and the whole season unraveled. You weren't able to stay healthy. You weren't able to get that momentum back. And the Clippers were probably never as good again later in the season as they were in that first 16-game stretch. And honestly, I'm not sure that the Clippers were ever as good in the Chris Paul era as they were during that 16-game stretch. Now, I'm not saying it only happened because of that, you know, maybe a little bit of entitlement or complacency staying in Dallas and not going to Detroit, but I do think that was a contributing factor to the Detroit loss, which was like the first domino towards all of these other things that went wrong after that, injuries and, you know, guys going cold and whatever. So, you know, I wrote on the Clips Nation blog on Saturday, which you guys should definitely read if you don't, clipsnation.com. I wrote that this is a reminder to the Clippers after their quick 4-0 start that has a lot of people saying, wow, the Clippers are legit, or maybe the Clippers are better without Chris Paul now that they have all of these supporting pieces. This is, you know, this Pistons matchup specifically, I thought, should have been a reminder to the Clippers, hey, early season success can be fleeting. Look at what happened last year. And so I was hoping that they would come out with a little more focus against the Pistons and a little more killer instinct and almost like with something to prove. Like, you guys probably remember when Chris Paul first came to the Clippers, he would have this thing where he would talk to Ralph Lawler, who was the Clippers play-by-play color commentator and has been with the team forever. And Ralph Lawler would tell him, yeah, in the last 10 years, the Clippers are like 2-27 against San Antonio in San Antonio or something like that. And Chris Paul would go, oh, well, I don't like that. And so he would go in and he would make sure that they won that game. Like, it meant more to him than it meant to the Spurs because it's just a regular season game. But he played it like it was a playoff game. Or they'd say, yeah, the Clippers have lost 11 games in a row in Utah. Well, Chris Paul is going to go and he's going to make sure you win that game. It means more to him than a normal game. And so I thought there was a chance that this Pistons game, because of the way that last season unraveled starting with the Pistons and the way that this season has also started out well, I thought there was maybe a chance that this would mean more to the Clippers than a normal game. And unfortunately, it does not seem like that was the case. I don't think it was a particularly horrible performance, but it definitely was not some sort of supercharged revenge game. Now, there's some conflicting feelings in the Clippers about what exactly happened in this game. So Doc Rivers comes out after the game in his press conference, and he says, I don't think we had the right spirit tonight. This is a quote, I don't think we had the right spirit tonight. I didn't think we played together. As a team, we've been great, but today was a step backwards. We played the blame game, pointed fingers at each other, which is something that we haven't done at all. I've seen winning, and that is not winning. To me, every once in a while, the basketball gods take over, and we deserved to lose. We tried to rally, and it's easy to do that when you're down, but we lost the lead because our heads weren't right tonight. I don't know what the reason was, and we're going to be a really good basketball team, but we're never going to be a good team if we play and act like that. We deserve to lose. I hate losing, but I was fine with losing tonight. And then Blake Griffin came into the press conference after Doc Rivers and said, quote, I thought we missed shots. I thought we made small, stupid mistakes here and there just as a team, but I didn't see anyone pointing fingers. But that's a perspective thing, so maybe Doc saw it from his perspective. So this is kind of an interesting differentiation for me because, you know, it can be hard from us watching on TV to necessarily notice finger pointing. We don't know what's being said in the huddle. We don't know what's being said at halftime. We don't know what's being said after the game. And oftentimes, you know, sometimes you will see, like, egregious bad body language or poor communication between teammates that you can notice as a viewer. Like, I know there was specifically one play that stuck out to me where Austin drove to the basket and, you know, DJ was open for a lob, but Austin isn't, like, that kind of passer. If it was Chris Paul or Milos Teodosic, it would have been a lob to DJ. But for Austin, even though DJ was open, I'm not sure that Austin really has the vision or passing skill to be able to find him there. So Austin went for a shot and got blocked, and DJ was, like, visibly annoyed, which, you know, while maybe Austin should have passed it, maybe he is capable of making that play, but I just don't think that it's good for DJ, like, especially in the first quarter of a game, or it was the second quarter, it was early on, to just be acting visibly frustrated like that. I don't think it's a good sign of where the team's mind is, especially because so much of what they do is fueled by DeAndre's kind of upbeat communication and energy. So to see him down a little bit was definitely a little concerning. So I do see a little bit of an attitude thing. And then just speculatively, I think coming off of a big win in Portland, buzzer beater win, you're 4-0, you're feeling good, people are saying good stuff about you. And on Monday night, you're playing the Warriors. I think it's easy to overlook the Pistons on Saturday night. And I think the Clippers may have done that as well. Now, the Pistons aren't a bad team. They are not the Nets or, you know, the Pacers or the Magic or one of those really bad teams. Or the Bulls. The Bulls are really bad. Wow. But the Pistons are also not an especially good team. I think they're – I mean, I do think they're good, and I probably actually personally like them more than a lot of people do. But they're not like a Cleveland, Boston, Oklahoma City, San Antonio, Houston, you know, marquee big-time opponent like that. And so I think it's easy to overlook them when you're coming off of a big win, and a lot of people would probably consider Portland to be a better team than them. So you go to Portland, you beat them on a buzzer beater in Portland, great win. You come back to LA to play a worse team, and then your next game is against the Warriors, which is like the big bad wolf of the NBA. So I think it is easy to overlook them, so I do think there's probably a lot of mental stuff at play in this loss, not just missing shots, and maybe, in fact, a good deal of the missed shots, which I do think ultimately was the reason why the Clippers lost the game, was, you know, make or miss kind of deal. But I do think the reason why you miss shots is because maybe you don't come into the game with the same killer instincts. Like I talked about them wanting to come in and have this game mean a little more to them than a normal game because of the way things went last year. I didn't feel like that necessarily happened. So maybe it was a little lack of focus led to the poor shooting. But I've read a lot of people talking to me about how concerned they are with the Clippers' offense following this loss. And I'm just not sure that that is really the case. I mean, I feel like they're just missing shots. I mean, any time when Blake Griffin and Danilo Gallinari combine to go 9 of 34 from the field, that's probably a game you're going to lose, especially if in the same game Patrick Beverley goes 3 of 9, Lou Williams goes 3 of 9, Wesley Johnson comes in off the bench and shoots 1 for 7. I mean, the only guy who had a good individual offensive game was Austin Rivers, who had 20 points on 6 of 12 shooting. The Clippers are basically a team that doesn't have a primary creator in the way that Chris Paul used to be. They don't have, you know, their LeBron or their Steph Curry or Kevin Durant. They don't have someone who's going to who you can give the ball to every single possession. But what they do have is they have 6 pretty good creators who all kind of share the load a little bit. Obviously Blake Griffin, obviously Danilo Gallinari, and then you've got the 4 guards, Beverly, Rivers, Tay, Dosic, and Williams. With Tay Dosic out, the Clippers are basically left with 5 creators. That's still fine. I still feel like that's fine. And those 5 guys, 4 of them had bad nights on the same night against Detroit. So it's a game you lose. Now, again, maybe a different level of focus, a different level of preparation, a different level of communication might have avoided all of them having bad nights on the same night. That's entirely possible. But I just think that this kind of performance, 33% from the field, is not something that is going to be repeated. I don't think it's something you need to go sign a free agent to come fix. I mean, the worst team in the NBA last year at field goal shooting shot 44% for the season. The Clippers shot 33% in Detroit. I do not think that a lineup of Beverly, Rivers, Gallinari, Griffin, and Jordan, even though they might not be the best offensive lineup, even though maybe they would be better if they had a pure point guard out there running the show and finding guys, I don't think that that lineup is 11% from the field worse than last year's Dallas Mavericks. And so I feel pretty confident in saying that Saturday's game was an outlier and not a trend of what this team is going to look like for the next couple months while Tay Dosic is out. The other thing, I mean, the flip side of it is that whenever someone's like, the Clippers need to go get a point guard, the question is kind of has to be who, right? That isn't something you can do in a vacuum. Like, you can't go to, you know, 2K, create a player, and just make a starting point guard to come sign for your team for the minimum. You have to say who. And unless they were to pull off a trade like an Eric Bledsoe trade, I just don't see there being a guy there out there who's good enough to come in and help. Like, Austin Rivers and Patrick Beverley and Lou Williams might not be pure point guards, but they are capable combo guards who are capable of doing some distributing. And I'm just not sure that any of the quote-unquote pure point guards out there that are available actually play at a high enough level to be a better distributor than these guys. Like, Kendall Marshall could probably come in and get some assists, but is your offense really going to be better with Kendall Marshall running it than Patrick Beverley? I don't think so. Than Lou Williams? I don't think so. Austin Rivers? No. So I think the Clippers are fine with these guards. I think it's just a matter of hitting shots, especially for Gallinari, who's had a really slow start to the season. So it'll be interesting to see what Doc Rivers does with his rotations going forward to try to get these guys into situations where they can help each other succeed. Especially, you know, he's been staggering Gallinari and Griffin a lot. I kind of wonder if it might be a smart move to actually play those guys the bulk of their minutes together, which basically would let them each get better looks, right? Because it hurts you more to double off of, if you're another team, it hurts you more to double off of Gallinari than it hurts you to double off of a guy like Wesley Johnson who comes into the game. And if you're Gallinari, you're going to get more looks playing with Blake Griffin because he has the most gravity, which helps you get free and finish plays as an elite shooter and scorer. And then I think what you do is you actually, instead of staggering those guys with each other, I would stagger those two with the two better scoring guards, Lou Williams and Austin Rivers. So you have, you know, the majority of the game is going to be Griffin and Gallinari on the court because they play a lot of minutes. But when Griffin and Gallinari come off, and they don't have to play, you know, they don't have to always sub on and off at the same time, but for the most of the time play together, when Griffin and Gallinari come off, then you go with a lineup like Beverly, Lou Williams, Rivers, Wesley Johnson, and DeAndre Jordan. And it gives you that three-guard lineup, so you have the next three best creators on the team, Beverly, Rivers, and Lou Williams out there, you know, running the floor, attacking the basket, Wesley Johnson playing team defense, you know, and standing in the corner on offense, and then DeAndre running the floor, protecting the rim. I think that that lineup could be fine as sort of like a second unit. So if Beverly, Rivers, Williams, Wesley Johnson, and DeAndre Jordan is your second unit, then instead of staggering Blake and Gallinari with each other, it's more like you're bringing in the other guys, you know, Willie Reed and Darius Thornwell, to play with Griffin and Gallinari to let the other three starters, and then Lou Williams, who's the best backup, play intact as a group, you know, on the quote-unquote bench. So that might be, I mean, I think that's interesting. That might be something that I would look to if I was in Doc's shoes, but obviously there's like infinitely many ways to go with the rotation, so he's got options. The Clippers they're staying home, but they're facing the Golden State Warriors tonight. Golden State has not been without their struggles so far this season. A loss to the Rockets on opening night, a loss to the Grizzlies in their third game, a loss to the same Pistons that beat the Clippers, actually. The Pistons went to Staples Center to beat the Clippers on Saturday, and they went to Oracle Arena to beat the Warriors on Sunday, which is pretty freaking impressive. That's like the first time that a team has beaten, like, pulled off a Clippers Warriors back-to-back since like the Spurs in 2014, I think I read. So that's like astoundingly impressive for the Pistons to do that, especially because it's not like OKC or Houston did it or Cleveland or Boston, right? You know, like I said, the Pistons are a good team, but they're not someone you think about as being like a world beater or one of the best teams in the NBA. So super impressive weekend for the Pistons. And now both of these, you know, Clippers and Warriors are playing in the like Pistons consolation game, basically. We both lost to the Pistons. So it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see, you know, I haven't watched very much of the Warriors this year, so I'm not sure how much of their struggles are legitimate or if they're missing shots or if they're playing lackadaisically because it's still October. So we'll see, I imagine, a little bit of that, of what's actually going on or if there's anything actually going on, because my hunch tells me that nothing really sustainable long-term is going poorly for them. Then we'll see if maybe they get fired up to play the Clippers and actually have like a strong performance after a pretty weak start to the season, because we know that they always get fired up to play the Clippers. One interesting thing is that the Clippers are so new this year. It's like Blake and DeAndre are still there. Austin's still there. Wesley Johnson. Bryce Johnson was technically on the team last year, but he didn't really play. And then it's a bunch of new guys. And this is, you know, maybe echoes a little bit the reason why they didn't bring that sort of edge to the Pistons game to get revenge, because most of the guys weren't here last year when that game happened. Like, Patrick Beverley probably isn't even aware that the Clippers had that great start last year and then that it started to fall apart with that Cowboys game on Thanksgiving and the trip to Portland. Like, why would he be aware of that? I certainly don't know ins and outs of the narrative of Houston's season last year. And so, you know, that could be another thing. Like, who knows what this rivalry really looks like now, because the Clippers look so different. And do the Warriors still get fired up to play them and play their best games of the season against the Clippers and beat them down? Or do maybe they approach it a little differently now, which could help the Clippers be a little more competitive than they have in years past? So, you know, it'll be an interesting game. I think I'm looking forward to it a little bit more than I'm looking forward to, or than I used to look forward to the Golden State games the last couple of years. But still, you know, not a great feeling going into this one for me. Hopefully I'm wrong and the Clippers can pull it off. I will be doing Facebook Live videos tonight during the game, so make sure you go to Facebook, type Clips Nation into the search bar, hit like. There will be a Facebook Live video at halftime. There will most likely be a Facebook Live video post-game as well. And we talk about the game, talk about what happened. So go there, leave questions, tweet at me, at Lucas J. Han, leave questions, tweet at ClipsNationSBN, leave questions, go to ClipsStation.com, leave questions, leave questions, leave questions, leave questions. That's going to do it for this episode. I think we will be back tomorrow, like a 75% chance there will be an episode tomorrow. If not, there will for sure be one on Wednesday. And as always, if you have any comments, questions, or feedback, you can hit me up on Twitter, at Lucas J. Han. You can email me, lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han, signing off for Locked On Clippers.